Hello, this is Jeff Riddle from Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is an audio version of a book review that I have written. The book under review is Leland Ryken's book, The Legacy of the King James Bible, celebrating 400 years of the most influential English translation. It was published by Crossway in 2011 and is 265 pages in length. My review of this book first appeared in the Reformed Baptist Trumpet, Volume 2, Number 2, in 2011, and it's found there on pages 16 through 22. Here now is the review. Leland Ryken is a professor of English at Wheaton College who has been part of the Bible as Literature movement among evangelicals, for example, serving as editor with his son Philip Ryken of the ESV Literary Study Bible. Most significantly, Ryken served as the so-called literary stylist for Crossway's English Standard Version. The book under review was written to celebrate the 400th anniversary of the King James Version, 1611 to 2011. The Preface, Contradictions. In the preface, Ryken lays out his approach. He writes to praise the King James Version as a distinct literary and cultural achievement in the English language. He also acknowledges that in this era of revisionism and debunking, there has been no small effort to undermine and debunk the KJV. The KJV is, according to Ryken, on the hit list of cultural revisionists. The irony here is that Ryken himself has, to some degree, contributed to this debunking through his promotion of modern translations like the ESV. He even engages in such debunking within this book. He notes, quote, "I do not believe that the King James Bible is the best translation for a reader today," end quote, page 13. He then lays out several reasons for this assumption. First, he states that the KJV is not based on the best available knowledge about the Bible in its original Hebrew and Greek. He says some parts of the KJV are based on ancient manuscripts that a majority of scholars today regard as inferior. See page 14. Ryken here assumes the superiority of the modern critical text over against the traditional text of Scripture without providing any in-depth rationale for this conclusion, other than the fact that this is the majority consensus of modern scholars. Next, he accuses the King James Version of not being, quote, "as accurate as modern translations that are based on the principle of essentially literal translations," end quote, without providing any supporting examples or evidence. See page 14. Interestingly enough, however, he also adds, quote, that in the past, "I have too glibly pronounced the KJV suspect in accuracy," end quote, also on page 14. Finally, he states that, quote, "the real case against the King James Version for regular use today is the archaism of the language. For modern readers unfamiliar with the King James Bible, the language is an insurmountable barrier. Even for people who have always used the KJV, some of its words are a mystery," end quote, page 14. Again, Ryken presents this argument as a prima facie fact without offering any supporting evidence. As with his comments on accuracy, however, he then backpedals by noting, quote, "if I were forced to choose between the King James Bible and a modern colloquial translation, I would choose the King James Version," end quote, page 14. Wait, which is it? Is the KJV an often inaccurate translation based on an inferior text that is unintelligible to modern English speakers? If so, why then would one prefer it to a so-called modern colloquial translation? As he closes his preface, Ryken notes that there is a strong, what he calls, sneer factor in some circles against the King James Version, adding, quote, "some people imply by name-calling that the KJV is ridiculous, but the case for its inferiority is never laid out. I hope that in making the case for the King James Bible, I will prompt some people to see that the allegations against the KJV are rarely supported by honest argument," end quote, page 15. Would such allegations include saying that the King James Version is an inaccurate translation based on flawed text in an indecipherable, archaic language? As the citations from the preface make clear, Ryken reflects the tension of attempting to hold two contradictory impulses as he approaches the 400th anniversary of the King James Version. On one hand, he wants to praise the KJV as a literary and cultural achievement of the English language, even defending it against its harshest critics. On the other hand, he shares the essential modern critical perspective that has resulted in the undermining of the KJV and the attempt to exclude it from modern usage. The content. Here's a summary of the book's four major sections with some analysis of each section. Part 1, The King James Bible in Its Own Day. This section offers a historical overview of how the King James Version came into existence. It begins with the work of John Wycliffe and William Tyndale, which paved the way for and deeply influenced the style and language of the KJV. It proceeds to discuss the English translations that preceded the KJV: Coverdale's Bible, Matthew's Bible, the Great Bible, Geneva Bible, Bishop's Bible. Finally, Ryken discusses the making of the KJV itself, from its origin at the Hampton Court Conference in 1604 to the forming and work of the translation team to its final editing at Stationers' Hall in 1609 and its publication in 1611. Of note is the description of how the KJV soon came to dominate the market and supplant all other translations, including the popular Geneva Bible, as a translation of choice in English. There are some points with which one might take issue here. First, Ryken stresses that the translators were, quote, a very human lot, approximately the same as the committees that have produced our familiar modern translations, end quote, page 49. But is this true? Adam Nicholson, for example, would contradict this point. In his book, God's Secretaries, from HarperCollins in 2003, in which he discussed the making of the King James Version, Adams describes the Puritan translator, Lancelot Andrews, when he says, "The man was a library, the repository of 16 centuries of Christian culture. He could speak 15 modern languages and 6 ancient. But the heart and bulk of his existence was his sense of himself as a worm. People like Lancelot Andrews no longer exist. It is because people like Lancelot Andrews flourished in the first decade of the 17th century and do not now that the greatest translation of the Bible could then be made and cannot now." And again, that's from Nicholson's book, God's Secretaries, page 33. Has there really been a Lancelot Andrews, or 54 of them, on the committee of any modern translations? Second, Ryken again introduces contradictory notions, as in the preface, regarding the so-called accuracy of the King James Version, offering both criticism and defense of it. He notes, quote, "Two things make it hard to get a fair hearing for the accuracy of the King James Bible today. One is the fact that the archaic language of the KJV is so acute for people unfamiliar with it that it is easy to conclude that it cannot be an accurate rendering of the original biblical text. The second is that the King James New Testament is based on original manuscripts that are today considered inferior," end quote, page 62. With regard to archaisms, Ryken notes three levels of difficulty for moderns: inflected verbs, the verbs that end with the ETHF, the unfamiliar vocabulary, and words with changed meanings. Once again, however, Ryken raises these objections, but then provides his own rebuttals to them. When he says, quote, "This is not to deny that a modern reader can be educated into what words meant for the translators and their contemporary audience. I find myself looking far and wide to find examples in the King James Bible of words whose meanings have changed so drastically that the translation can be called inaccurate. Perhaps the number of these is statistically insignificant. But for readers unfamiliar with the King James Bible, the mere presence of archaic language and constructions is usually interpreted as evidence that the King James Bible is inaccurate. This is a false impression, end quote, page 63. With regard to the so-called second strike against the text, Reichen again expresses his preference for the modern critical text, but he softens his critique of the King James Version's text when he says, quote, "We need to tread cautiously here. To say that the King James New Testament is based on manuscripts that are today considered less than the best can superficially sound more sinister than in fact it is. If the received text is considered by most, not all, scholars as second best, that does not mean that it is bad," end quote, pages 63 and 64. Reichen even offers, quote, "a caution against a facile dismissal of the possibility that the King James Bible might represent accuracy, even a superior accuracy in our day," end quote, page 66. Part 2, The King James Bible in History. Reichen begins by noting the influence of the KJV in subsequent English Bible translations. He then discusses the influence of the KJV on language, education, and religion. Of interest here is Reichen's discussion of the, quote, "non-Western influence," end quote, of the KJV, including anecdotal accounts of non-native speakers who learned English by reading the King James Version. See pages 86 to 89. As an aside, we might note that if this is so, why is it that modern Americans supposedly cannot understand it? He also notes how the King James Version provided a standard for everything from tombstone inscriptions to Bible quotations to Bible commentary texts, as in Matthew Henry, for example, for generations. Finally, he looks at the influence of the KJV on culture in everything from great speeches like those by Lincoln or Martin Luther King Jr. to music, as in Handel's Messiah, to visual arts, as in the works of the painter Holman Hunt. He concludes this section, quote, "Claims that the King James Bible was the most important influence on English and American culture for over three centuries are accurate," end quote, page 114. The most intriguing aspect of this section, in my view, is Reichen's discussion of subsequent modern translations. Reichen notes the influence of the KJV even, quote, "on the Bible translators who rejected it," end quote, page 72. For modern translations, he says, the King James Version was a father figure who needed to be slain. See page 72. Reichen then proclaims, quote, "There are three modern translations that are indisputably in the procession of the King James Bible," end quote, page 72. According to Reichen, these three are the RSV, the NKJV, and the ESV. He is particularly keen to exclude the New American Standard Bible and the NIV from inclusion in the procession, perhaps because they are rivals to the ESV. Despite his claim that this is indisputably the case, I would dispute it. The RSV and ESV and the NASB, coming from the American Revised Version of 1901, have their roots in the Revised Version of 1881 rather than in the King James Version of 1611. None of these make use of the traditional text upon which the King James Version was based. Therefore, it can certainly be disputed that they follow in the procession of the King James Version. Reichen appears driven here more by his personal association with the ESV, which Crossway, the publisher of this book, produces, than by the facts. Part 3, The King James Bible as a Literary Masterpiece. Reichen begins by asking, what makes an English Bible literary? He notes that the King James Version debunkers often take issue with its so-called literary excellence. The ultimate touchstone of literature, he claims, is that it deviates positively from everyday discourse. See page 121. He concludes that the King James Version is, quote, the gold standard for a literary Bible, end quote, page 122. His discussion of the literary excellence here almost takes on the hagiographic overtones of a key KJV-onlyist. Ryken notes that the literary excellence of the KJV, to use his words on page 123, is nothing short of miraculous. It is, quote, the only literary masterpiece ever to have been produced by a committee, though completed by men who were not literary scholars and who had no conception of producing a so-called literary Bible, end quote, page 123. Ryken speculates that this greatness came from the unique Renaissance time period. He even suggests that the translators were inspired by the great university buildings at Oxford, Cambridge, and Westminster Abbey, where they labored. One is not likely to produce a cheap and tawdry Bible translation, Ryken says, when walking to committee meetings amid such sublimity. See page 125. He also praises the timing of the King James Version's production at a strategic moment in the development of the English language. There was, as he puts it, a unique window of opportunity at a moment of great energy and expansiveness. See page 125. Ryken next devotes a chapter to the prose style of the KJV, praising its variety and flexibility. The vocabulary is simple, almost ponderously monosyllabic, and Anglo-Saxon rather than Latin. The prose rhythm of the KJV is, in Ryken's words, matchless. See page 139. It is a majestic, quote, oral book whose excellence shines brightest when we hear it read aloud, end quote, page 140. Next comes a chapter on the King James Version's poetic effects. Ryken praises the poetic idiom and rhythm of the King James Version, though he claims that it was supposedly a criminal offense of the King James Version translators to print poetry as prose, referring to the King James Version practice, unlike modern translations, to set even poetic sections of Scripture in block verse, just as in the prose sections. Ryken acknowledges that the poetry of the King James Bible is rhythmically the best among the English translations. See page 146. In the end, he admits that it is not possible fully to explain what he calls the King James magic, page 149. The King James Version is both simple and majestic. It is, Ryken says, quote, the most aphoristic book in the English language, end quote, page 155. Finally, Ryken concludes this section by noting, quote, the virtually unanimous preference of the literary establishment for the King James Bible over the other Bible translations, end quote, page 159. Even Ryken appears to have been taken aback by what he discovered in composing this chapter. He writes, quote, it will come as no surprise that English and American authors, as well as literary critics, prefer the King James Version. I suspect, though, that the vehemence with which they prefer the King James Version will come as a mild shock. The problem that I faced in composing this chapter was avoiding overkill. I have accordingly kept the chapter brief. I will note in passing that I do not remember ever having encountered a member of the literary establishment who preferred any English Bible other than the King James Version. End quote, page 160. Also of note here is the citation from T.S. Eliot, who famously described modern Bible translations as, quote, an active agent of decadence, end quote, as cited on page 166. Part 4, the literary influence of the King James Bible. This final section explores the influence of the King James Version on English and American literature. Ryken traces the influence of the KJV on the literary imagination through great authors like Milton, Bunyan, Blake, Wordsworth, Joyce, Hemingway, Steinbeck, Eliot, etc. His conclusion is this, quote, even though the Bible no longer elicits the religious belief of most authors, the King James Bible has remained a pervasive literary presence, end quote, page 227. Afterward, Ryken ends his book suggesting that on the 400th anniversary of the King James Version, quote, we should celebrate a victory, lament a loss, and resolve to hold on to what is excellent, end quote, page 229. The victory celebrated is the amazing success and influence of the King James Version. The lamented loss includes four things. First, a loss of a common English Bible. Second, the eclipse of the Bible's authority concurrent with the loss of a common English Bible. Third, the decline of biblical literacy concurrent with the decline of the King James Bible. And fourth, what he calls the effective and literary power of the King James Version. See pages 229 to 231. Ryken's conclusion offers a striking apology for the value of the King James Version over modern translations. As he writes, quote, claims by modern translators and Bible scholars that the Christian public is fortunate to have been delivered from the archaisms and occasional inaccuracies of the King James Version turn out to be hollow. If Bible knowledge in our day has declined across the board, where is the alleged gain from modern translations? End quote, page 230. Finally, Ryken suggests we should hold on to what is excellent. This includes remembering, one, King James Version sales remain strong and its use remains unabated in many Christian circles. Two, the influence of the King James Version endures in some modern translations. Three, we should use the King James Version when interacting with literature impacted by it. And four, lastly, Ryken says, quote, even if we use a modern translation most of the time, there are good reasons to read the King James Bible at least some of the time. See the quote on page 232. He concludes, we should not relegate the King James Bible to the status of a relic in the museum of the past. See page 232. Closing analysis. Ryken has done an admirable job of commemorating the 400th anniversary of the venerable King James Version of the Bible. At times, his discussion even borders on being hagiographic. As noted in my review, however, the book often reflects a contradictory tension. On one hand, Ryken wants to praise and defend the King James Version for those who would dismiss it as outdated and irrelevant. One almost gets the sense that he is doing literary penance for his promotion of the ESV. On the other hand, however, he repeats the same kinds of viewpoints that have resulted in the so-called debunking and marginalization of the King James Version. As when on page 13 he says the following, I do not believe that the King James Bible is the best translation for a reader today. Oddly enough, admiration of the King James Version and promotion of its continued usefulness is less likely to come from Protestant evangelicals who have been the most blessed by it, and more likely to come from the unbelieving literary elite. Here ends the review. You can receive audiobook reviews and notes like this one, Word Magazine podcasts, and sermons by subscribing to Christ Reformed Baptist Church's sermon audio feed on iTunes by searching for Christ Reformed Baptist Church. For video material, you can subscribe to the Word Magazine channel on YouTube.com. You can also find written book reviews, book notes, and articles on my blog, jeffriddle.net.